Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Text number 8, 9, and 10. We can chant the first one responsibly. I'll read the word meanings. Yat, which, lotus feet, Architam, worshipped, Brahma Bhava, by Brahma and Shiva, Adi Vihi, and others, Sudai, demigods, Shriya, by Shri, Cha, also, Devya, the goddess of fortune, Muni Bihi, by the sages, Sasatvatai, along with the devotees, Go, the cows, Charanaya, pretending, Anuchare, together with his companions, Charat, moving about, Vane, in the forest, Yet which, Gopikanam, of the cowherd girls, Kucha, from the breasts, Kumkum, by the red Kumkum powder, Ankitam, marked. Yadarchitam Brahma Bhavadi Bhishurai. Shriya cha Devya Muni Bhisasatvatai. Gocharanaya nucharais charadvane. Yad gopikanam kucha kumkumankitam. Yad architam brahma bhavari bhisurai. Shriya cha Devya Muni Bhisasatvatai. Gocharanaya Nucharais Charadvane. Yad Gopikanam Kucha Kumkumankitam. Yadarchitam Brahma Bhavari Bhisurai. Shriya cha Devya Muni Bhisasatvate. Gocharanaya Nucharais Charadvane. Yad gopikanam kucha kumkumankitam. Ladies.
Yadarchitam Brahma Bhavati Bhisurai.
Translation: those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas. Upon those lotus feet, the Lord walks about the forest while herding the cows with his companions. And those feet are smeared with the kumkum from the gopis' breasts. And we can chant together. Tukshami nunam kukakolana sikam smitavalokarunatam jiloshanam mukam mukundasya buralakavritam pradakshinam me pracharanti vaimrika. Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. That face, framed by his curly hair, is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. Purport: Akura saw an auspicious omen, the passing of the deer on his right, and thus felt sure he would see the Supreme Lord Krishna. Apyadya Vishnor Manuja Twami Yusho Bharavataraya Bhuvo Nijichaya Lavanya Dhamno Bhavito Padam Vanam Mayam Nanasyat Palamanjasa Drisha. I am going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu, the reservoir of all beauty, who by his own sweet will has now assumed a human-like form to relieve the earth of her burden. Thus there is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. It always occurs to me how easy it should have been to go from Mathura to Vrindavan. Now we take a taxi, it doesn't take very long. But even then, I think it's like a day's, seems like a day's chariot drive. They start in the morning, get in the evening. Uddhava also, and he also came from Mathura to go see, bring a message to the gopis. So he also arrived at sunset. So one would think that people would always be going there. The residents of Mathura want to see Krishna's hometown or visit their friends there. But we don't hear too much about that. Well, the reason one would think is that because the bhava is different. Krishna's three abodes, special abodes, Dwaraka, Mathura, and Vrindavan, each one is higher than the next. And Dwaraka is a little higher than, Mathura is a little higher than Dwaraka, then the highest of all is Vrindavan Dham. And in each place, the residents have a particular relationship with Krishna. So, it would seem that Yoga Maya arranges that only certain persons can go. Akura, he's getting the chance to go, which is quite amazing for him. He's feeling so fortunate. But we see how the way he thinks is a little different from the Vrijvasis. Even Uddhava also, when he went, Uddhava, it's described when Uddhava went there, how it was so beautiful. We were just hearing the other day that actually the whole place was really just racked with sorrow, but it was covered over by Yogamaya to look like things were normal. But he saw such beauty there. The beauty of the village was astounding to him. That in itself, just the rural atmosphere, was so attractive. Because he's a city boy, Uddhava, he lives in the city. So he's coming out to the country, and especially Vrindavan Dham, it's just so beautiful. So Akura is also from the city, so he's coming in there. And his mood is also slightly different. His prayers, as we see here, he's not praying here, he's just thinking at this point. He'll offer his wonderful prayers. But he's thinking that this is God. God has descended, and I'm going to see him. So right away, we notice the difference. The Brijbasis, they don't think that way. This is God, and now he's here among us. They just think he's our beloved Krishna. So he's a bit of an outsider. And, of course, we know Akura is going to get in trouble with the residents because of the mission that he's on. That in itself is... It's interesting because he's playing such a pivotal role in this pastime of Krishna, going to take Krishna out of Vrindavan and basically kill the gopis and other residents of Vrindavan. So he's got a leading role in this drama, you might say. And I was looking for the reference. I thought there was some mention about how Akura got into trouble in Dwarka, this Shyamantaka Jewel episode. And I thought there was some connection with the gopis being displeased with him, although I couldn't find it. But it seems like I've heard that before. Part of the reason he got in trouble was because the gopis they cursed him, or at least they were certainly unhappy with him taking Krishna away. So Akura is an interesting personality in this Leela. He's coming from outside. He's going to witness the bhava of the residents of Vrindavan. The one thing I noted as I was looking at this and also previous verses, something we hear all the time, maybe we don't think about it much. I thought about it a lot the last few days. I'm not sure I came to any conclusions about it, but I think it's interesting to observe is how often we use the word lotus feet. Someone asked me just the other day, a new devotee, why do we say Krishna has lotus feet? So, well, there are different reasons for it. Actually, there's two parts. There's lotus and there's feet. First of all, I looked on the Veda base. I was thinking, how would we live without the Veda base? Huh? So I'm thinking someday we'll probably have a big console up here, you know, all kinds of audio, visual. We'll be playing with buttons, the whole class, showing things. Part of technology is that you forget how to think, and probably complain sometimes that devotees couldn't say anything unless they had a book. And he would say, "Oh, you don't know? There's some saying, apparently Bengali proverb or something. I'm intelligent only when I have the book in my hand." So now we have our electronic device. We won't have to memorize. What's the inspiration to memorize a verse with the click of your finger? There it is, right in front of you on your electronic device. Actually, scientists are noting, neurologists, those who deal with the brain, their thinking power is going downhill because they're not using them. Machines are doing all the thinking for us. So in any case, I use the Veda base. It's nice. And I did a search for the phrase, you can search for phrases, lotus feet. There's 18,600 hits I got for the phrase lotus feet. So if you've ever done any searches on the Veda base, that's a big number. Even Krishna comes up 200,000 times. I figured, let me just make a comparison here. Krishna comes up 200,000, so one-tenth as many times the phrase lotus feet comes up. So it's amazing how often that phrase comes up, lotus feet. And it's hard to find. One thing I had a hard time was saying, I'm not sure of any conclusions I came to, because I was thinking, how often do we take this literal? Of course, we don't take the lotus part literal. Obviously, he doesn't have lotuses growing out of his feet, although he does have a lotus growing out of his navel, which is one reason we say that he has a Padmanabha, he has a lotus and navel. The other thing is a whole bunch of words for lotus, the different lotus and lotus feet. So the word, generally the idea with lotus is just that it's beautiful. Prabhupada explains it like that in one place. It's hard to find anything because there's so many hits. It's hard to go through 18,000 hits. Obviously, I couldn't go. So I was just trying to scan them and trying to find information. So Prabhupada does say it's because because the lotus is so beautiful. And that's why different parts of Krishna's body are compared to lotuses. In fact, in the Nectar Devotion, it says there are 8 parts. 2 hands, especially the palms of his hands. His hands, his feet, his eyes. In the prayers by Kunti Devi, Prabhupada translates that his eyes, Prabhupada says, netra, Prabhupada translates there as the glance. He has lotus glances. So sometimes it says his eyes are beautiful. It's said about Gornitaya, Janu Lambita Bujo, Kanakavadato, Sankirtanaya Kapitaro, Kamalaya Taksho. Their eyes are like blossoming lotus flowers. So their eyes are beautiful like lotuses. And sometimes Prabhupada just says, resemble lotuses. But in any case, he says, because of the lotus's beauty, that's why we use this word. And in one place he says, I forget the exact phrase that he used, but the idea was that the lotus is the most beautiful thing in the world, in the material world, the lotus flower. So the lotus is, in itself is very important to us. Well, what would we have without the lotus? So many places the idea of the lotus comes up. Even the Brahma Samhita, Sahasrapatra Kamalam Gokulakyam Mahatpadam, is described that Shwetadweep or Goloka Vrindavan, this is the second verse of the Brahma Samhita, it's in the shape of 1,000 petaled lotus. And that lotus is Anantanksha, or a portion of Anantadev. That lotus is Balaram. Ananta is Balaram, Baladev. So you can say in the shape of a lotus, Lord Balaram holds Krishna. But Krishna is always standing on the lotus. Sometimes it's said that Krishna is standing on the lotus of the devotee's heart. So literally in Goloka Vrindavan, which is also called Shwetadweep in the Brahma Samhita, it's in the shape of 1,000 petaled lotus. And Krishna is standing on the whorl of that lotus. This word whorl, I always had it in my mind that the word whorl somehow meant the very center of the lotus. But that's not what it is. The whorl actually means the design of the petals. In botany, any plant that has at least 3 petals that come out kind of circular fashion from the middle part, that's called the whorl. So Krishna stands on the whorl of the lotus. That means he stands on that part where the leaves are. He stands on the leaves. So Prabhupada says that Krishna is always standing on the lotus because even when he comes to this material world, he brings his dham with him. So when he comes here, he's all still standing on the lotus of Goloka Vrindavan, which accompanies him wherever he goes. So Krishna's feet are lotuses. Oh, I didn't get through the list, did I? 2 feet, 2 hands, 2 eyes, face and navel. Especially these are mentioned in the Nectar Devotion. And usually in describing Krishna, we begin at the feet. Now there's an exception, you know, in Kunti Devi's prayers. Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, Namo Pankaja Maline, Namo Pankaja Netraya, Namaste Pankajangrihe. So this is nice. Prabhupada makes note of it in his purport. She begins with his navel, then she goes to his lotus garland, and then to his eyes, and then to his feet. And she does this because she's his aunt, she's his superior. So Krishna would have felt uncomfortable if she started at his feet. So she started at his navel, worked up, and came around, as Prabhupada's phrase. And in the round, everything is in order, he says. I always like that phrase. So that's her round, chanted one round. So she's seeing Krishna's lotus, so many lotuses like that. So the lotus is, Krishna has lotus feet. The devotees have lotus feet. In so many places we hear how we should need to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. There was one devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, why do we say lotus feet? So the idea of the question was, why lotus? What's the idea of the lotus? So Prabhupada, his answer was by explaining that if you take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the water in this material world Samashritaye Padapalavapalavam. He quoted that verse and explained it. If you take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the water, the ocean, material suffering shrinks down to the water in the hoofprint of a calf. So he just gave a purport on Krishna's surrendering to Krishna's lotus feet. And it seemed to me that it's almost as if Prabhupada doesn't hear the lotus. He just, lotus part, he just hears the feet part, lotus feet part. It's like so many things we say, we don't think necessarily. We just say lotus feet and we don't necessarily think of feet. We just think lotus feet. So the term is used so much. It's just amazing. As I was looking through it, I was saying it's practically every time Krishna's feet are mentioned, lotus feet are mentioned. And the phrase is just everywhere. So then now let's get to the feet part. When it talks about feet, how often do we literally mean feet? Or does Prabhupada literally mean feet? Or does the scriptures literally mean feet? Now here in these, or does it mean, there's a word in grammar or poetry, I think it's pronounced synecdoche, if I get it right, or something like that. I may have it pronounced wrong. But the idea is that, just like in poetry, that kind of metaphor is that a part represents the whole. Just like you say, we'll count heads. So we don't just mean heads, we mean the body too, not just the heads, the people. So a part can represent the whole. So it seems to me that a lot of times, in fact, this was my premise when I started doing this research, was that most of the time, when we say the lotus feet of Krishna, we don't just mean his feet, we just mean Krishna. We're going to go see Krishna. Or when Prabhupada says we should constantly think of the lotus feet of Krishna, it just means we should think of Krishna. It came up recently, Dhruva Maharaj was giving class and he asked the devotees, do you think of Krishna's lotus feet when you're chanting japa? So when I heard that, I thought, we're supposed to think of Krishna's lotus feet? And then and then there are places, just again the Bhagavad Gita and in other places where Prabhupada says, we should always remember Krishna's lotus feet by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So I was saying, well, maybe that's where he got that, and maybe that's actually, we are supposed, I thought I always just took it in kind of a symbolic way, well, we're supposed to remember Krishna, not necessarily his feet. But the more I looked around in the Veda base, it seems like there are a lot of places where it seems like it really means the feet. In fact, there's so many references like that that I was saying, well, this should actually be called the International Society for Krishna's Feet Consciousness. Because there's so much of that in our books. Then I guess it'd be too hard to say ISKCON. It wouldn't work very well. So we just call it Krishna Consciousness. But there's so many references to the feet of Krishna. Of course, we know in the universal form, it says that one should begin by meditating on the lotus feet. In fact, it's said there that one should meditate on the feet for a very long time. So, of course, why the feet? That's another question, of course. Why the feet? Well, the simple answer is because generally the feet are the lowest part. Well, they're always the lowest part, unless you're walking on your hands. So they're the low part. And the idea is you show humility by going to someone's feet. I heard that doctors say the feet are the most neglected part of the body. People don't take care of their feet. We kind of forget about our feet. I know I forget about mine, especially in the winter, because they're always covered with socks. I never even see them. So the feet get neglected. And of course, they're dirty because they're on the closest to the ground where the dirt is. And traditionally the sadhus would walk everywhere barefoot, so when one would receive a sadhu, one would wash the sadhu's feet. And as a sign of humility, one would take that water, put it on one's head, or even drink it as a sign of humility. So going to the feet, and we offer dandavats, of course, we're going down to that level, going down to the level of the feet. And sometimes we even take the feet. There are places where it's mentioned. A lot of times I think, I wonder how they did that exactly. The devotees took Krishna's feet and actually placed them on top of their head. When Lord Brahma had darshan of Garbhodakshay Vishnu from up there on top of the lotus flower, way up there, looking down at Garbhodakshay Vishnu, then it says that Garbhodakshay Vishnu lifted his lotus foot or feet, I forget exactly, it's like showing his lotus feet. So the feet are, there's something special about Krishna's feet. Now, I don't know why it's so, if the emphasis is given there just because we always have to keep the position of humility. So we always think of ourselves at the lotus feet of Krishna. Prabhupada once said that about himself. I think someone asked him something like, Prabhupada, it's easier to think of you than think of Krishna. And Prabhupada said, well, think of me at the lotus feet of Krishna. I'm always situated at the lotus feet of Krishna. Prabhupada. Pada, you can say, at the feet of the Prabhu. The original Prabhu is Krishna. So that's the idea there. We are actually supposed to meditate on Krishna's lotus feet. In fact, I got so bewildered by reading all these references to the lotus feet. I came to the for darshan this morning. I was thinking, well, maybe I should just be looking at the feet the whole time. You know? In fact, sometimes I feel like that. I'm too embarrassed to look. Should I really be looking at Krishna face to face? Have I come to that platform where I can look at Krishna's face? Gee, it seems really presumptuous. But of course, that's part of deity worship. That the pujaris decorate Krishna's face. We're supposed to be attracted by Krishna's face. We were hearing about the rasa dance, how if you hear the rasa dance, your lust becomes destroyed. What's also said that if you look at Krishna's eyebrows, that also destroys the lust in the heart. But still, they're supposed to be, apparently because of so many references, this is the impression I got, we're really supposed to think of Krishna's lotus feet. Actually think of those feet. Now, of course, there's also the metaphorical side, which Prabhupada explains that, for one thing, he says, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna means carrying out the instructions of the spiritual master. And it's also in one place, Prabhupada said, of course, we have the term the dust of the lotus feet. And it says that one, there are a couple of places where it says abhisheka. You're supposed to take an abhisheka of that dust, rajobhisheka, the abhisheka of the raja, the dust of the lotus feet. So naturally you think, well, gee, no one has that much dust on their feet that you could take a whole bath in it. So this seems to be metaphorical. But what does it mean to take the dust or take a bath in the dust of the lotus feet? It means to follow the instructions. In fact, Prabhupada said, this is the dust of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. That's his instructions. You carry out those instructions. So there's certainly a metaphorical side of it also, taking the dust of the lotus feet. Although we also do want to touch the lotus feet and take the dust, literal dust, because that's purifying. Anything in touch with the spiritual master is very purifying. So in any case, this is the devotee's ecstasy, those feet. They're special. Even the gopis, what do they say? They say we want to take Krishna's feet and put them on our breasts. And those feet are so delicate. Usually the feet are, people's feet tend to be rough and calloused. And especially if you want to do a parikrama around Govardhan or something, you have to get them calloused first. So the thorns don't get you and little stones. So Krishna's feet are so soft, then the gopis think they don't can't even bear the touch of their palms. It said that about Lord Ram's feet also. Lord Ram is going to the forest, no shoes. So they're so soft they couldn't bear the touch of Sita's palms, it said. So those are Krishna's feet. So the gopis are thinking, we put them on our breasts, and even our breasts are too hard for Krishna's feet. So they certainly meditate literally on Krishna's feet. How those feet, and here Akrura, he's also thinking, those feet touching this holy land. That's one of the reasons why devotees meditate on the feet, is because they can see the evidence of the touch of those feet, the marks of those feet. Imagine walking in Vrindavan and seeing the signs that are engraved in Krishna's feet, the lines of his feet, the different symbols. Another reason why Krishna's feet are called lotus, Prabhupada says, is because he does have lotus. That's one of the markings on his feet, that he has a lotus, at least on one foot. So the devotees, they think of that, they meditate on how the earth is always being touched by Krishna's feet. She lamented when Krishna left the planet because She's no longer being touched by his feet. And she's especially fortunate. She's more fortunate in Vrindavan because she gets the direct touch of Krishna's feet. In Mathura and Dwarka, Krishna wears sandals. But in Vrindavan, he goes barefoot. So she gets special mercy, direct touch of Krishna's lotus feet. So this in itself, we think of actual meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna in this way, talking about this kind of Krishna katha that's specifically about Krishna's feet. But I think the other side of it is also there, where just in general, because it's like a respectful way of addressing Krishna. Instead of just saying surrender to Krishna, we say surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. Or instead of just seeing Krishna, think of seeing Krishna, we say I'm going to see the lotus feet of Krishna. It's just a respectful way. It's like our minds are in that humble attitude. It's like we place them at the lotus feet of Krishna. So it's just another way of saying Krishna, saying lotus feet of Krishna. So that side of it also seems to be there. But there's no doubt, with so many references, the decorations of Krishna's feet are described many places. The ankle bells decorating those beautiful feet. How the yogis are always meditating specifically on those feet, and so on. So Akura, he's got the right attitude arriving in Vrindavan. Of course, he's seeing Krishna as God, but at the same time, he's thinking first of all of those lotus feet that are touching the earth. And I think he's going to see the impressions, and he's going to start reciting his prayers. So just seeing the impressions of those feet are going to put him in the ecstasy where he's going to offer these wonderful prayers. So let me just read one of these verses. I'll read the last one. I'm going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Yes, he addresses him as Vishnu here, Vishnu. The reservoir of all beauty, who by his own sweet will has now assumed a human-like form to relieve the earth of her burden. Thus there is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence. Any questions or comments? Tirvikaram Prabhu. Three-footed one.
Three-footed. On the lotus. On the lotus flower. Apart from its beauty, it also has that special quality that it lives in the water, but it never gets wet.
Yes, that's another.
It lives in the water. So, we have to learn to be in this material world, but don't get entangled in it too. You know? So I guess the lotus flower is special. Yeah, apart from the beauty, it's also like transcendental in some ways. And also I was thinking maybe look at our hands. It's free from hair or anything, the hands, the feet. You know, the eyes look like lotus petals, so I guess those are reasons.
Not everyone's hands are free from hair. Actually, one thing I was going to mention about the literal and figurative use of lotus feet. There's one instance where I think this definitely has to be metaphorical. We say offending the lotus feet. You offend the lotus feet of a devotee, or you have to, of course, that's the mad elephant, offend the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. So it can't be just literal that if you step on a devotee's toes or kick him in the foot or something, that's all it refers to. So that's an example where the lotus feet of the devotee just means the devotee. You can't offend the devotee, but we say offend the lotus feet of the devotee. So sometimes that terminology is used when we're referring to the whole person. But we use lotus feet because of the respectful way of mentioning it. Another thing about the lotus, you said it's beautiful and the lotus is not touched by the water. Even the lotus leaf, of course, you put a drop of water on it, the water just sort of beads up and rolls off. Kamala dala jala jivana talamala. It says our lives are like that, like water on a lotus leaf. Very precarious, can fall off at any moment. And also there are places where it says that Krishna's feet have the fragrance of lotus flowers. So feet tend not to be the most fragrant of objects. So Krishna's feet are is very, very fragrant. Yes, Prabhu.
First question, I don't remember if there are nine kind of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam. There is also one to serve to the lotus feet of the Krishna, I'm not sure. And second is about these omens. When the Akrura was going, he saw the good omen. So it happened often that devotees, we should see the good and bad omens, or...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't hear. Can someone understand? I can't. Take the microphone.
Yeah, the omens.
The omens.
Uh-huh. Yeah, when the deer passing on the right side.
Yeah.
You know, so he was saying, like, if the devotees should think about those things.
Prabhupada never emphasized those things, although they're there. Traditionally, in Vaishnava culture, especially Brahminical culture, in that fact, not too long ago, I know a devotee who was born and raised in Vrindavan. His father was very strict about omens. When he would walk out of his house, he would look left and right, and depending on what he'd see, he would decide whether which direction he was going to go or whether he was going to go out at that moment. Sometimes he'd go back into the house and wait because he saw some omen. And he was a, you know, Pukka Brahmin. So this was part of the tradition, but Prabhupada didn't teach us these things. Well, you can find them. In fact, I was recently looking at one website that had different Vedas on it, Puranas, and I was kind of skimming through them. I was looking through the Garuda Purana, and there's a whole list of these kinds of things. So it's definitely there, it's part of the tradition, but it's not something that Srila Prabhupada emphasized very much. In fact, hardly at all. It's mentioned in the scriptures here and there, but he didn't really incorporate it into our Vaishnava culture. I can't quote, but I've heard things like that. I'm not sure. I'd have to try to find a reference for it. I'm not sure about that. I would assume he probably would avoid traveling on Ekadashi, but that's slightly different. Hey, I think Prabhupada's mood towards that was, if it's not too inconvenient, if it doesn't hamper the preaching, then yes, we can follow these things, but it's not going to determine, you know, if there's urgent need to preach, then we'll ignore it. This is not our highest consideration, as it is for others, like Smartas, for example, might be extremely strict about those things. And if it impedes the preaching, well, too bad. But Prabhupada's attitude was the other way. If it impedes the preaching, then we won't. But if it's not too inconvenient, we can do it. Madhumatika?
I was thinking, you're talking about lotus feet and how sometimes we hear that, you know, Krishna put lotus feet on the chest of the gopis or like that, you know, here. And just recently I wonder about how does that happen? And then recently I saw a picture of Gauranga Mahaprabhu putting his lotus feet on the chest of Haridas Thakur. There was nothing written on there,
On his chest.
Yeah. Mm. There was a painting like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, this is literal.
Mother Velasini, wait for the microphone.
The last thing you read said that Krishna assumed a human-like form.
Mm. Yeah, you're wondering, doesn't Krishna eternally have a human-like form?
Yeah. I mean, doesn't that old saying, man was created in the image and likeness of God, always to me meant that...
Well, he does. We can't put too much emphasis on one word because so many things Prabhupada says are not literal. And even here now, I don't know, let's see... Of course, that's the way they put it in the translation. It does say in the Sanskrit, Iyusha, and it says, who has assumed. Well, maybe that's the way that, for one thing, because he's, you know, Krishna has come and appeared before. The other thing is Vishnu, he's seeing him as Vishnu. So what Akura's actual realization is, but that's the way he's speaking here. Of course, Vishnu also has a human-like form, but not exactly human because he has four arms or sometimes eight arms or many arms. So it's sort of human-like. But Krishna's two-armed human form. So it could be that that Akura is actually thinking primarily that Krishna is Vishnu. I don't know. Of course, you wouldn't think so, though, because of his relationship with Krishna. Although even the Yadavas, isn't it said that they saw him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, in their midst? That was their mood. So maybe Akura is thinking that way, too. This is God. This is Vishnu. Now he's appearing this way, in a two-armed form. Yes, over here. Oh, someone here.
I would think in the Hindu community, they would take that verse and say, oh, yeah, Vishnu is higher than Krishna.
Akura is not one of the Mahajans. Of course he is a Mahajan. We have other authorities, higher authorities.
I just wanted to say that when you was talking so much about the lotus feet, it reminds me something that I always remember, that in Bhagavatam said also the texture of the lotus feet, Krishna lotus feet, is like a petal. It's silky, like the rose petal. Mm-hmm. And every time I touch, the roses are so silky and soft, mm-hmm. and I can imagine, you know, so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
in fact,
it's so beautiful to think about that.
It's soft. And the metaphor of the lotus feet actually expands to the petals. Krishna's toes are compared to the petals of the lotus feet. Yatpada pangaja palasha vilasa bhaktya. The Kumaras, one of their preaching to Prithu Maharaj, describe how the devotees, because they're meditating on the petals of the lotus feet of Krishna, they get free from all material desires. So yeah, soft, komala. Krishna's whole body is komalanga. Komala means soft. So his feet also, they're soft and smooth like the petals of a flower. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.